Folks, it's the Shay Anything Podcast, a Thursday edition that was almost a Friday edition. Doug Williams alongside Andy Martino.
It's a really interesting
always.
Backstory.
Huh? Yeah, yeah, we should take the first 10 minutes and explain fully why we ended up doing the show on Thursday and not Friday. Just kidding, we're not going to do that. We have a lot of interesting Mets topics to talk about. Once again, if you haven't subscribed to this podcast already, please do. Give us a rate and review as well. We always appreciate that. Why does it feel like we haven't done this in a while? Did we have a show last week?
We must have. I don't think we've missed a week.
Yeah, I think we did.
Wait a minute. You're right, though.
Yeah. But, oh, so the David Wright...
It's been a crazy 2 weeks in New York baseball. Yeah. So David Wright... last week was a really big week in Mets land because on consecutive days, Jay Horwitz and David Wright either basically announced their plans to be less involved in the future in various ways. And this was a sea change, very transitional time for the Mets. So we were wrapped up in that.
And we must have done a podcast. We did a Tuesday
before
podcast.
Before all that stuff.
I think the Jay conference, press conference was on Wednesday.
David Wright was
Thursday.
Wild week.
I texted Andy and I said he did a great job. You and Steve came up with Gary and Nelson after that presser. Nelson was visibly emotional on set after David spoke. What was it like being in that room?
Topic one, recapping the David Wright press conference. Here we go. It was intense. Look, I didn't expect it to be that intense. And I'll tell you why, Doug. Because David Wright is a winner. This was in life. And this was a low stakes announcement in theory. Because here's a guy who has a happy baseball story in every imaginable way other than winning a World Series. But he got to play in one and hit a home run in one. Played for the team that he grew up rooting for. Had a great career. Is as respected in the game on a personal level all through the league as anyone really is, and made piles of money to set up his family for generations, every way you look at this thing. So I was like, I feel for David Wright. I have a lot of feeling for this particular storyline, I think, because I've covered him for so long and gotten to know him pretty well over that time. But I just didn't think that this was a particularly sad thing, to be honest with you. But being in the room, there was the room of his news conference, there was an unquestionable heaviness to it. Obviously, a major contributing factor to that was that Wright himself was crying. I mean, not just choking up a little. He was really crying. And he had his hat pulled over his face so he didn't see his eyes, and he was really struggling. I've seen him in a number of different scenarios, in a number of different moods. I've never seen him cry or choke up or anything like that. He is very composed and very much able to control how he presents himself. And that was powerful seeing him do that. And I thought that the way he presented himself underscored really why he's an abnormally well-adjusted person for a ball player. He said, my beautiful wife, Molly, was a phrase that he used, and it really caught in his throat. And he really struggled to talk about his family, mention his family. That made him very emotional. He talked about, he was really open. There was an extraordinary moment that got lost where he was talking about when he originally hurt his back, which led to spinal stenosis, was when he dove to tag Carlos Lee at third base in 2011.
Like, Johnny's cover the bag.
That was like, well, first of all, he's never thrown a teammate under the bus like that in his entire career. Yeah. He just obviously was beat. That was the real David Wright.
Yeah.
He was too emotional to be anything but real. And so I didn't realize that John Neese was the pitcher that day. I totally forgot about that. So that was an interesting thing. And so you really saw a guy who was genuine. So it was emotional. And there was no question to that. Now, my role, I felt, Steve and I were going on immediately after he was done. And I felt like my role was to be composed and just be a reporter doing a remote. And that wasn't that. Don't get me wrong. I wasn't like really fighting it. It was just like, wow, this is heavy. And it was a little hard to shake off. And then we go on the air, and I was trying to explore, like, live on the air in real time, why it felt emotional and trying to unpack that. And what I arrived at was this idea that no matter how happy of a baseball story David Wright is, his career and his physical decline just reminds us all of different of a long, long, long phase of our lives. If you have been following him, if you were watching that press conference, you care about David Wright. You're probably a Met fan. You've been following your whole career. I've been covering him. The first day that I ever was assigned as a Daily News intern, my first day in this business, was in the 2008 season. I was sent to Shea Stadium to back up Adam Rubin, who was the Mets beat writer at the time, and write sidebars. And Adam introduces me to David Wright, and he's like, oh, this is a new intern. And David Wright's like, oh, congratulations. And I had this style, like, I was told in journalism school that you should always, like, stay at someone's locker until the scrum was gone, so you had some original fresh quotes in your story. So I, like, really had that drilled into my head. So I'd always hang around and, like, ask one more question, even if it wasn't that meaningful. And Wright, like, developed this thing through that year where I was an intern where he would tease me for it. He was so young. He's kind of a goofy young kid at that time. And I was, like, this super nervous intern. And, like, he would tease me about, oh, watch out. Like, I'd try to get an interview with someone else. Oh, watch out for this guy. He's going to take up an hour with you. Or stuff like that. It was all good-natured. But he was very, very young. And he seemed very young at the time. And so, like, that for me, I started talking about on air him through the years and how that means something to people. And I'll tell you, I hit it, but I started choke up a little too when I was talking about that. Because, I mean, baseball is just so humanizing. I'm not going to get all wax philosophical about baseball, but you see these guys day in and day out, year after year. It's not like other sports where their face is covered. You know, the sport proceeds slower than basketball. It's just like you really feel like you get to know these guys, even if you're just watching on TV year in and year out. So David Wright dropping out of your life, if you're a Met fan, is sad. David Wright for himself not playing anymore is sad for him, even though he knows it was a good career. And for me as a writer who's marked time in my career by covering him, very poignant. And I think that's why, and so I wrote something like sort of along those lines that day. It's about time passing and almost like mortality. And another writer who covered the beat with me texted me, you know, to be like later in the day, texted me, you know, to be honest with you, he said in the text, he said, to be honest with you, I thought your column was too morbid when I first read it, but then I left the ballpark hours later feeling so sad that I was like, oh yeah, that is the feeling. I'm not telling this story to say like, oh, my column was right. I'm telling the story to say like, it had a really heavy effect on all of us. And you know, I'll share this too. I didn't, like, that was a very busy week. I worked a lot of late nights. I didn't get the chance to debrief on any of this with my wife at home. Just, like, tell her the story of the day and David Wright's ending his career and what went down. And over the weekend, I was telling her about it, and I started talking about that first day as an intern. Started talking about this idea of, like, oh, my God, the years are going by so fast, and David Wright's retirement is reminding us of that. And I cried. I lost it when I was talking to my wife about it. I just, like, and it's not because it's sad. It's just because it's poignant. And so there you go. 4 or 5 days later, I finally let it out myself. And I think a lot of you out there are feeling that same thing in some way. And to be, I'm a little emotional talking about it now. So there.
I think that it was an interesting couple of weeks because, you know, the David, I don't know, it was a rehab assignment. It was different than normal rehab assignments, but that's what it was. So he's spending a couple weeks, he's getting at bats. The numbers aren't great. He's not playing 3 days in a row at third base. And you went to Vegas, you talked to him, and you know, the first question was, are you going to play, I believe it was in the majors for the Mets this season? And he said, well, the simple answer to that is yes. Was there, I'm curious, was there a confidence when you sat down with him then that had changed by the time that he was sitting up at the presser at Citi Field? Or do you think he always knew, yeah, I believe I'm going to play again, but only in this capacity? Like, do you think he realized over the last couple weeks that he can't continue to do it, or do you think he always knew it?
I think he pretty much knew it that whole time. And if you go back and look at it, that interview even, like, he was saying, yeah, I'll play. I don't know when. I don't know what I'll be able to do. I don't know what the future is. Off camera, I asked him explicitly later after the game, kind of like, you could tell me, is this it? Are you retiring? And he didn't tell me that he was retiring. He said, you know, he talked a lot about his family. He talked a lot about, I'm not quite sure yet, but he didn't give any indication to me that he was, like, in denial about where this was ultimately going and how quickly it was probably going that way. And I think he was coming to grips with it. Then he gets home. He hadn't communicated with Mets front office yet at all. They hadn't communicated with him at that time in Vegas. So it was a sense of, like, I'm not sure exactly what the plan is. Then he gets to New York. He plays in a couple of simulated games, sits down with Jeff Wilpon. more conversations there, and they arrived at a conclusion. But if you remember, that I was sort of saying all along when I was asked on air or stuff I was supposed to write, I was saying that I think he's going to play like another game or two and retire. And right. the reason I was saying that was because of what I'm just describing to you now, is that I know him and I got that vibe without him telling me. So I think he knew the whole time.
And one of the points you made when you were with Steve right after the presser was, you know, say what you want about Jose Reyes, but David Wright and Jose Reyes have had this long tenure with the Mets, mm-hmm. not necessarily just years-wise. Obviously, it's been a lot of years since they first started in the organization, but it's really spanned, managers, eras, just general team direction, front offices, and I think that that has a powerful effect, that something you grew up with eventually goes away. And that's kind of a fascinating thing to explore for a baseball fan. You know, you have new things to attach yourself to. If you're a Met fan, you got these great starting pitchers. You have a new era to attach yourself to if you want. But if you are someone who isn't great at letting go, and a lot of us aren't, that's what you have to do with David Wright and Jose Reyes as well. So I'm assuming that we'll see them mm-hmm. at shortstop and third base before this season is up. And yeah. I think that that's going to be an emotional moment for Met fans.
Yeah, and it's a good that's a good point. And the thing about Wright, too, Reyes, because of the domestic violence issue, is not in the same category. But
not even close.
But Wright lives up to, this is the thing, not only is he a marker of time and something that's hard for people to let go of simply because they liked rooting for him on the field, as we're saying. But in every imaginable way, he lived up to what anyone would have wanted him to be. And I can tell you guys listening, he really is like that. And I spent time, that wasn't emotional. That was just like a post-adolescent voice break. But I spent time in the years on the beat, like trying to be like looking at David Wright closely and being like, what is your deal? Are you really like as you present yourself? Because he was awfully good seeming.
Yeah.
And I was like, what's the deal? And there was a time when younger teammates, around 2010, younger teammates would tell me that Wright was a little, at that time, like a little bit behind a wall, like maybe a little bit of a robot, like a little bit Derek Jeter-esque.
The main criticism of Derek Jeter throughout his career.
Yeah, and that Wright was sort of slipping into that a little bit, maybe not connecting as well. Always a good guy, but I think he went through some different stages of how to handle himself as like the face of the franchise. And he withdrew for a time, both with the press. There were times covering the beat where I wouldn't talk to him for, not like we weren't speaking, but we wouldn't interact for a while, a couple weeks at a time maybe. And then he'd be at his locker with a whole group of reporters. But over time, he warmed up again to everyone around him. He became such a leader to the team. And then he gets hurt. I think he does a lot of reflection. There was never a bad time with him, but I think his basic goodness and the way he treated people just continued to get better and better. And there's so many examples. We know that John Harper shared that David Wright called him when John was laid off from the Daily News. Or I'll say this. He's just somebody who, and people can tell watching a ball player what kind of character he has a lot of the time, too. And he just, so that created the extra attachment. And all the stories behind the scenes that I've seen or other people have seen, and many of these stories have been told, just support that for the fans. So that makes it ever more poignant. You know, there was one somewhere along the line when Josh Tolley was on the team, there was a weird reporter in the Mets clubhouse who is interviewing Wright, like acting kind of goofy, whatever, one of those kind of amateurish interview situations that you see. And Tolley calls me over and he was like, who's that guy? I'm like, I don't know. And he's sort of giggling. And I sort of succumbed to peer pressure maybe and started, Josh Tolley's a nice guy, but I started giggling maybe a little with him or like rolling my eyes with him or something, which I shouldn't have done. And as soon as the interview's over with Wright, the guy walks away to get so Wright's not embarrassing him. Whenever the guy's gone, David Wright turns to me and blows me up in the clubhouse. And he's like, what are you laughing at? When you first got here, when you were an intern, you were like, oh, Mr. Wright, can I talk? And you're so nervous. And now you're going to condescend to somebody else. And I'm like, you're right. It's the only time I ever had like an argument with him. And he was like totally right and made me think about the way I was behaving and conducting myself. And like, you go and you say, well, I should treat people as well as David Wright does, for God's sake. How much more important is he than I am? And he can be nice to somebody.
Right.
And anyway, it all just goes to, I'm rambling a little, but it all just goes to why this is extra poignant, because he deserves all the affection that he's getting from the public.
Right.
Because of everything he does and how he conducts himself.
And it's interesting you mentioned that he's, and we'll move on right after this, but it's interesting you mentioned that he's changed over the course of time. But that's, by the way, impossible to avoid when you've been in...
Right, since he was a kid.
You've been in the public eye for your entire adult life. You know, if any of you are listening, you are different than you were 10, 15 years ago, and you've gone through peaks and valleys, you've changed, maybe you've gone back, you reverted to certain parts of your personality that you didn't have for a little while. That happens. So, this won't be the last time, obviously, we talk about David Wright. We will talk about him very soon on this podcast after he plays, and we'll kind of go through the emotions of that. I do want to talk about this current Mets team and moving towards the future, Andy, because, again, the numbers are good right now with this team, and there's a lot of ways that you can spin, I don't know, maybe August and September in a positive direction. July as well was fairly good. June was just that terrible month.
They win 5 games in June?
Yeah, I mean, it was terrible. So there are ways you can spin it in a positive direction. We've talked about on this podcast about whether or not that's fool's gold or not, but we have 3 categories this week. And there are each agree or disagree questions that Jeff Goldman, our producer, thought of. And the first one is agree or disagree, the Mets should trade Peter Alonso this offseason. And I think part of the reason we're even having that discussion right now, Andy, is that, you know, we've seen Jeff McNeil come up and perform so well. We have all these options at first base. And a lot of fans out there are talking about, well, we keep hearing Peter Alonso's at DH, but we heard the same thing about Jeff McNeil. He's been great at second base.
Yeah.
But at the same time, if he is truly a DH, where is he going to play? Blah, blah, blah. So agree or disagree that they should trade him, Andy?
Certainly think they should explore it. And they should see. There's no downside to seeing how other teams value a guy like that. I certainly don't think he should be an untouchable. I think that he's buried on the depth chart right now at first base in the organization. I would put Dom Smith ahead of him. Dom Smith has had the chance to work through the growing pains, is an excellent defensive first baseman, and might still hit. So that's something to consider. I would also listen on Dom Smith, don't get me wrong. I just don't think either of these guys should be untouchable if another team wants them. And Smith's defense is a strong argument for him. And Jay Bruce has got to be your first baseman next year unless you can get someone to take him on. So
right.
I would say that if there are ways you can upgrade by talking about trading Peter Alonso, particularly to American League club, then yes, definitely seriously explore that. But look, don't feel like you have to. Like, let him.
No.
He should be. It's one of the things that's really annoying about the narrative around him and the big leagues is that, given your organizational depth, given the service time concerns, it should be totally non-controversial and a fact that Peter Alonso has got to be in AAA at the beginning of next season.
Right.
But that's going to be a whole thing.
No, I mean, we've talked about it on the podcast, and if anyone still feels angry at the Mets organization and thinks it's personal or thinks it's, you know, not rewarding the guy, there are so many reasons why he didn't get called up. And there are more cons than pros. And if you need more proof of that, you can listen to the Adam Fisher episode, or you can read Andy's write-up of what Adam Fisher had to say on the episode of Shea Anything. I would explore it as well. And I think there are people out there that would look at the combination of him not getting the call up and getting traded and be like, the Mets organization was personal. They had some sort of...
No.
He's just like anybody else. And he had a very good year, but a year that started in AA. It would have been a long ascension. It would have been a lot of a learning curve for 1 year. And I think for Peter Alonso, you look at the American League this offseason, you see how other teams value him. You've got this stockpiling of guys at first base. And I agree with you on Dom Smith. Look, Met fans hear that. They hear that Dom Smith's above Peter Alonso and makes them angry because they just haven't seen Dom Smith do anything consistently at the big league level. But he's been hurt. He's made some mistakes, yes. But he's exactly like you said it. He's a reliable defensive first baseman, which is a very underrated aspect mm-hmm. of his game and any player's game. As any Met fan will tell you, defense should be more valued in this franchise than it has been. So I would look to American League teams this offseason, see what you can get. And if he is a lifetime DH, they're going to want him more than the NL teams.
I can tell you for a undisputable fact, because I've asked, and people who I trust, that the Mets were not angry with Peter Alonso's comments. They didn't mind. There's nothing personal going on there. They would have a problem if he kept saying it. But it was like, okay, you feel that way. You and your agents said how you felt. And the communication between the Alonso camp and the team after that was fine. That's right. My understanding of it. So if they traded him, it would be a baseball move. And look, the Smith thing complicates it. Just earlier this season, no less an authority than Jim Duquette was telling me he thinks that Smith can be a 20 home run, 280 hitter, obviously good defensive first baseman, and that's a really valuable thing. So if they keep Smith and he doesn't work out, send your mail to James Duquette, care of Sportsnet New York, for World Trade Center.
Yep. Okay, second one. Agree or disagree? The Mets are shutting down Zach Wheeler. I'll answer this one first. Totally agree.
I agree that they're doing it.
Yeah, I mean, do you agree with the fact that they are doing it?
I agree with the fact that they have
done it. That's a fact. Play ball, Andy.
Wait, agree or disagree? Mets were right to shut down Zach Wheeler. Is that what you're trying to say?
Yes, and everyone listening understood that. You're the only one.
You just keep reading that sheet, Burgundy.
Okay, so I agree with this. First of all, it's not some big-time decision. It's not July or August.
Right.
And he's thrown, I think it's 100 more innings than he ever has.
Yeah, it's a no-brainer.
So you got to do it. And by the way, there's something to be said about ending it on this run that he's been on. I know he gave up more runs in his last start than he had previously in a long time, but to end the season where Zach Wheeler is a huge thing for this team moving into next year. And I liked Dave Island's comments kind of about Wheeler, and he was saying this is why Mickey and I were so adamant at the trade deadline with our front office that we should keep these guys because we believe that we could win a 7-game series with these guys.
Are you telling me that Dave Island had an opinion? That is so weird.
First of all, I can't figure out if like Dave Island's opinions are like too much or that I actually appreciate interesting things coming from a pitching coach.
Dan Worthen was one of the most interesting human beings I've ever met.
Right. And I agree, and I think Worthen was great and the players loved him, but I didn't hear quotes that
he was more of a player's
fans
guy.
Fans fired up.
Dave Island knows how to make a headline. What can I tell you?
Yeah, whether it's a good or bad thing, I kind of appreciate it, but it also kind of annoys me. So, like, it's filling a void and a role that I'm not sure we needed, but it's kind of interesting.
I think it works for a while and then is maybe not the most sustainable strategy, but it's fun for a time.
But seriously, though, Zach Wheeler, what a success story this year.
Yeah.
I mean, really cool to see.
Yeah. Well, cool.
Turned his career around.
It is something to see. Yeah. I mean, why is it cool?
I think it's cool because...
I don't know why I'm being difficult.
Yeah, you are being difficult.
I wasn't going to just reflexively agree with that because I'm an objective reporter, and I can just tell you that it happened.
Oh, gosh. No, I don't think it's cool. It's not my role
but
to
it's
say
not,
it's
not,
cool.
It's not not cool. It just is. But you can say it's cool.
I think
because you're
cool.
A Met fan. You have your freaking Met PJs on over there.
He basically is going through things that normally young pitchers do.
Yeah.
And he's 29 or 28.
Yeah, I think he's 28.
And so. He is maturing and becoming the pitcher of his prime right now before our eyes.
Yeah.
I think that's interesting to watch.
I agree.
Especially, you know, we watched him struggle. We watched him try and get healthy, and he couldn't. And we thought we knew who he was, and we were wrong.
He's done a lot in the public. He's done all of this in the public eye. The phenom, then the bust, then the injury, then all these kinds of things, and we've seen him work
not
out his command.
Team,
not making the team this year. Go back and look. Google the picture. He had to take a team picture with the Vegas 51s this year. And if you look at his face in the picture, it's funny now because he's like had a good year, but it's like he looked just dead inside. This poor guy is in a AAA uniform at 28 years old with all this pedigree that he had. But so to his tremendous credit, obviously, the fact that he's worked out, he's shown more intestinal fortitude than maybe the Mets thought he had. He really proved something. And not just like his commitment to it or his makeup either, but the fact that he really struggled to command his fastball early in his career. As Adam Fisher's pointed out, people forget how it was really coming along before he got hurt. and then he missed 2 years. And so now what you're seeing is a continuation of that.
Yeah.
And a guy who, if he stays healthy, could be a good pitcher in this league for 3 to 5 to 6 years.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. He told Steve in this really good interview midway through this season that when he got sent to Vegas early in the year, he was like, if I give up 10 runs, I don't care. Like, I got to truly focus on doing what I believe will get me in a good place on the mound. And, you know, obviously he pitched well in Vegas, well enough to get called up, and it's stuck with the Mets. And I was trying to relate it to my own experiences, and I still think it would be difficult. Like, if I, 5 straight days, like, if I was doing really bad shows for this network, and they were like, we have a farm system in, like, a smaller market, like, I don't know, somewhere in Pennsylvania. So I get sent to Scranton to go hone my technique.
Interesting how you chose Scranton.
I was thinking of not
you were thinking
cities.
Of your favorite program.
I was thinking of, oh yeah, The Office is my
just
favorite TV
in
show.
There, it's in your brain there.
So I get sent to Scranton to work on doing shows. And let's say I start acing them in Scranton. Even getting called back up to SNY, there's no reason why you wouldn't revert back to, you know, slumping at this level. Like, Zach Wheeler could have easily gotten the call up, and it could have gotten too much for him, and he reverted back to the pitcher he was. Instead, he was able to carry what he learned by not making the team out of spring training and prove the naysayers wrong at the big league level, and I think that's pretty cool. I mean, it took him a little bit of time, but I keep using the cool word again.
It's cool. You feel that it's cool.
I do.
That's cool with me.
He didn't have to have this turnaround. He worked for it.
Yeah.
And he went through a lot to get here.
Yes, he did. And it's very I'll go with interesting, and I think we mean the same basic thing.
Some
by
journalist
it.
Yeah. You are. Wow. They should take away your insider.
It is
badge.
Interesting. It's not awesome to me personally, but it's interesting. I'm, of course, happy for him as a human being. I thought that it was a bummer for him that he missed 2015. He was supposed to be part of it. He was, for those of you audio listeners,
so
he's just shaking his
they
hands.
They just don't make them like they used to.
That's true.
Every journalist has to have an opinion now.
If I was a grizzled old writer, I wouldn't even be able to say it was interesting. I just like...
The third one, which is kind of coming off the second one, agree or disagree, the Mets should trade Zach Wheeler this offseason.
Oh, I'm so torn on this.
I am too. Because you get all romantic about it like I did in our second agree or disagree. I don't think they should trade him.
I
think he has more value to you as a one-year player to try and win in a fluky National League.
I like the way you think. Forget about getting...
You should, as I said it earlier, but you should have your insider badge. If they make badges for SNY's MLB Insider, removed and revoked.
Now, what am I now, a pundit?
Yeah.
Okay. Me and Malusis and Sal, just opinion makers. I've joined that.
Nothing wrong with that profession.
So listen.
It's just different.
I like what you said about trying to win with him as a one-year player and forget when I almost said a naughty word. I meant to say forget, like, what you can get for someone. Like, just forget it and try to win next year. Try to win with the 2019 Mets. I like that line of thinking. You see, you got to have some conversations with other teams this winter and see what you could actually get.
But I think it makes more sense. That line of thinking makes the most sense for Wheeler because it's only 1 year.
Yeah. So,
like for Syndergaard, it makes less sense because it's several years. Mm-hmm. Maybe because of who Wheeler's become, you could win next year without him and trade him and get something back. But for Wheeler... Mm-hmm. You know, you've got 1 year where the rest of the team looks like it's ready to compete potentially or try. Why would you rid yourself of 1 year of him?
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what. The gut check on whether they should trade him this winter is the fact that I've thought about this. Remember how mad a lot of people were they didn't trade him in July? Like, how could you not trade Wheeler? And I'm looking back on that now and I'm like, holy God, did they dodge a bullet by not trading Wheeler in July? Because he's good. He's a good player,
yeah,
and he's
really
on your
good.
Team, and you developed him. So it's just good to have good players. So he's there, and I think it's a really good move that they didn't trade into the Brewers or something for what they could get. Now, there's another way to think of this. This is why I would be a terrible pundit, because I'm like, on the other hand, I'm having trouble coming down too hard on this, because for years and years and years and years, I was writing columns for the Daily News saying, trade Zach Wheeler before he loses all his value. Trade Zach Wheeler. The coaching staff was like, Andy, please write column saying, trade Zach Wheeler. I mean, it was like people who knew him, who worked with him, were like, there's value now, let's capitalize on that. That would be the move. And Sandy Alderson was such a deliberate, conservative general manager. That was his style, that he never traded any of those guys. So then I said, and others said, when Wheeler was irrelevant for a couple of years, boy, did they miss their opportunity to trade Zach Wheeler. Well, guess what we're in right now, Doug? An opportunity to trade Zach Wheeler again. Right. So it's I'm torn, but I do think the way that the team looks now, the roster looks now, how good he is.
I hope everyone at home is enjoying the constant hammering you're doing on the desk, which I'm sure everyone can hear. If you could stop, that would be great. But
stop the hammering? Yeah. Is that what you're saying?
Stop that hammering. Woo! I think... I don't think you've missed the opportunity. I don't think the window of trading Zach Wheeler's closed. But I think it just makes less sense now. Like, you could get value back.
Mm-hmm.
You're not thinking about Zach Wheeler right now, are you?
No,
you're
I am.
Smiling.
I'm thinking about something. I'm thinking about stop the hammering. But I'm also thinking about Zach Wheeler. I'm smiling because I'm thinking about a certain viral clip. But I'm also thinking about Zach Wheeler because that's what we're talking about. And I think that the question of value...
Well, stop playing both sides. What's your answer? Agree or disagree?
I don't know. Let's just see what happens. No, really. This is what I'm about to say. This is how I would proceed if I were... By the way, we don't know who the GM is. If I were Johnny Mets GM...
The amount of by the ways you've said in this one answer. Just give us an answer.
They're real. I'm sorry. I'm not going to produce a hot take for you in your little podcast. I'm going to say that what the Mets front office should do is... explore Wheeler's value with other teams like they did in July. In July, they found that his value was not commensurate with the quality of pitcher that he had become, so they kept him. That may happen again this winter. They go, this guy's got 1 year left. He's been hurt most of his career. I'm not giving up a top prospect for a guy who has only been good for half a season. So you keep him. That's probably the way it's going to end up. Like you were saying, Doug, he has more value to the Mets right now as a player than as a trade chip. It's likely. But if the starting pitching market breaks a different way and Wheeler has tremendous value, then you have to consider that. It's really hard to deliver a take on demand for you when I don't
have... Did you call it my little podcast?
Your little podcast. So shade anything.
For my little podcast, I have talked shockingly little in this one episode.
I would ask
diagnostically that somebody check the percentage of this podcast's time that I have taken up this episode.
Am I like... especially verbal today?
Yeah. Which, by the way, is...
the point of this...
Yeah, one of the points of this podcast.
I haven't been on a BNNY in a while. Maybe it's because
I've been doing... Well, if we weren't verbal on the show, this would be a really bad podcast if we weren't verbal.
I think we should...
just be silent.
I think we should do a podcast that's just body language.
I think... By the way, we have a segment idea for Baseball Night in New York that I think you've heard about. Mm-hmm. It's a combination of Michael Flynn and I that have thought of it. He's one of the producers. And it's just called Make a Noise. We haven't done it yet, but we're saving it for the off season.
You got to have the right cast for that
where you're reacting to something, like I'd give you a headline. Mets trade Zach Wheeler. And you cannot use words.
Oh, God, I want to do that segment.
You can't use words. You have to make a noise.
Like, meh.
You'd be like, ugh. And then you can explain the noise, but you have to make a noise.
Can our listenership please weigh in on whether they want to see that?
Yeah, if you like the idea of that segment.
Do you guys like it when we do dumb stuff on BNNY, or are we just amusing ourselves?
Well, Venn diagram, I'm not sure how great the Venn diagram is of Shay Anything listeners and Baseball Night in New York viewers. I think it's a decent amount of folks, but
if you're an Andy Martino fan, you can't get enough content.
We do. Yeah, if you're an Andy Martino fan, this episode has been for you. Let's just put it that way. But... we do talk 50% Yankees on Baseball in New York, so I don't know if all Met fans
That's
watch.
That's true.
It's a good program, though. We talk Mets. We're
proud
casual.
Of it.
Yeah, we're proud of it.
My Saturday night.
Yeah. By the way, my answer, I would not trade Zach Wheeler. Okay. My Saturday night, I was in Montecito, California.
Ooh.
Which, like, you go to L.A., you're like, wow, this is kind of heavenly. Everybody should live here. You go to San Diego, same thing. But if you go to Santa Barbara and Montecito, even spend a day there, it's mind-blowing. Mm-hmm. I was in California for 3 days this past weekend. I didn't see a cloud.
I haven't been to Montecito.
Montecito is cool. I don't know it very well. I only went into town once. We had dinner at this place called The Lark, which is a great restaurant. It was the one place that I saw that had great reviews. Everybody said to go to, so we went. And, you know, beautiful. They've been ravaged by mudslides and fires in both of those areas. So it's cool that it's back kind of mostly up and running. Some places are still closed, but it's really beautiful there. And I was there with my girlfriend Emily. We had a nice little weekend. What did you do?
I don't know. I'm thinking about it.
Is it one of your like can't tell anybody? No,
no.
It's so secretive.
No, I don't know. Look, I got to have a life away from the paparazzi, Doug, at some point. But on this one, I'm actually forgetting. I cooked chicken for my family on either Saturday or Sunday. Oh, so either I cooked out or did that on Sunday. But I definitely know that my wife and I watched a documentary about Mr. Rogers.
Yeah, that's apparently great.
It's good. It's really good. Mr. Rogers, nice man.
Nice man.
Nice, really nice man.
By the way,
it was an affecting documentary.
I've heard you end up thinking there's got to be some sort of like weird backstory.
And there may be that it wasn't in the documentary. Right. You never know.
But
he's like, I want to make a point though that connects to where we got Mr. Rogers and David Wright both had the impact of the way that person treats people is something for me to look at and remind myself of. Mr. Rogers is so nice. And David Wright is so nice.
By the way, we got one tweet, and this is the last thing we'll do before we go. We got one tweet that said, you know, love my Saturday night, but do you guys ever watch the Mets? And you responded,
I can I have a day off?
Well, I agree with that sentiment. However, part of Andy's mocking of my non-cool Saturday nights, I don't always include it. It features a lot of watching baseball alone on my couch.
Why don't you bring that up?
I don't know. Because it sounds sad, and I don't want to paint a sad picture. I had a nice, fancy weekend in California. That should buy me
there
at least
go.
Two episodes of doing nothing.
I watch baseball games all week. I love it. I come home. I watch MLB Network and Quick Pitch after a game. I'm like one of these Alex Rodriguez-style baseball junkies. But people, can I have a night? My God. Can I just be me for a night of the week?
How can you have a night off by not watching baseball? That's not work.
Watching baseball is my job, and thank God I have a job that I love. But people, can I have a night?
All right. On that kind of angry sentiment, let's end this episode of Shay Anything. It's Doug Williams and Andy Martino. Thanks, as always, for listening. Please subscribe, rate, and review to us if you wouldn't mind on iTunes. Helps us out. We appreciate it. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next time.